And welcome to Papa's Football Podcast. My name is Howard Flood, and I'm rocking a solo show today. It's my first one ever on the Papa Podcast Network. Yeah, that's right. John is not on his own show's namesake today because, well, there was a snowstorm this past week in D.C., which means he's doing his show without me, and I told him I would step up and handle the content for the football show on my own this week. So, John, hope you enjoy the content. This one's for you. I think this week we're going to focus mostly on Jerome Bettis getting snubbed for the Hall of Fame. I know that a bunch of you probably are waiting for this Saturday because on Saturday we have the NFL Combine. However, John and I are going to talk about that next week after the results are in. I don't understand all these shows that want to look at players before they've been evaluated. What are we really talking about right now with anybody who might be showing up on Saturday? It's really a strange thing to spend a lot of time to discuss, so we're not even going to talk about it this week. We'll talk about it next week when we actually have some 40 times to look at, for example, that sort of thing. In the meantime, I feel like it's much, much better use of our time if we talk about who got snubbed in this year's Hall of Fame selections. For those of you who may not be aware, Jerome Bettis was once again a finalist. This was his fifth year of eligibility. He's been eligible since 2010. So in the 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2014 classes, he's been snubbed. So we're looking now for him to get in 2015, but there's something very awry with the fact that the sixth leading all-time rusher didn't get into the Hall of Fame his first or second years of eligibility. What is wrong with the Hall of Fame voters right now? So that is the subject that we're going to talk about today. I don't know if all of you have opinions as well, but please feel free to post them on our website. The website is pfpod.com. This episode's going to go up there, but we also appreciate it if you guys subscribe on iTunes. It really helps us with our traffic if you, one, subscribe to us on there, and two, if you rate us highly. So go ahead and give us a shout on iTunes. But also, if you have a feeling on Bettis, please go ahead and post those comments on the website when this post is up. Now, looking at Jerome Bettis, some of you may not be all that impressed with this player. I understand that. For me, I'm going to give you my case of why I think he already should be in. Why I think he deserves to be in before guys like Chris Carter, who is a Hall of Famer too, and yet the fact that he works at ESPN, whereas Jerome doesn't, is the only reason, in my opinion, that Chris Carter got in before Jerome. So I know that some of this is a problem with the number of guys who've been eligible that are worthy of the position. I'm not taking it away from anybody who's got in the last couple of years, at least when it comes to the modern candidates. I don't even want to get into the fact that a punter got selected out of those ancient candidates that they keep electing every. I don't understand why they have to pick two guys from back in the day every year nowadays. The fact that they elected a punter to the Hall of Fame this year is a travesty to me. It is a part-time player. I don't care how long you're in the NFL as a punter. Yes, you are important to the team, but it is a disgrace and it's disrespectful to every other person who suited up and regularly gotten whooped at the line of scrimmage, catching the ball coming across the field or getting sacked, getting tackled in between the tackles or bouncing it outside for a running back. I just don't understand why the guy who kicks the ball, who occasionally yields a penalty because of a running into the kicker penalty, or I guess that guy from Cincinnati this year was the one who got pretty well blasted on a play. But the way that the NFL responded to that Cincinnati punter getting completely obliterated behind the line of scrimmage this year, it just highlights that we don't view punters as football players. Anyway, I'm going to leave that alone. Let's not talk about this guy. Congratulations for him and his family. The rules for these guys who get in 25 years after the fact are a little questionable. I mean, I'm of that school of thought where if you belong in the Hall of Fame, it should be fairly obvious. It's already getting a little log jammed in there. So to go back and try to rewrite history for some of these guys, the number one response of most people today to these elections is pretty much who? Yes, true. There are some guys that should get in. A good example guy I think should really be considered for this position in a couple of years is Otis Anderson. You guys may not know who he is. He was the NFL Super Bowl MVP for the Giants when they won one of their Super Bowls. He had a pretty impressive career as a running back. We'll talk about him later. But, you know, there are some guys that probably have been missed over the past few decades. I'm not really happy, though, with the new selection system where they're putting in two guys from the past every year. It's absurd that there's now a punter for the first time in the Hall of Fame because of that additional rule. My opinion, they should have just put six people in if that was the second candidate for the ancient nominees. But let's get to the meat of football, something that I care about. I know some people like John, if you're listening, this is directed at you. Some people prefer watching quarterbacks play. Me personally, number one reason I love football is watching the running back position, watching whoever carries the rock through the trenches to advance the ball for yardage. That's what I want to see the most in football. It's number one reason I watch. I do love a good passing game. I grew up watching the West Coast offense on the 49ers, something I really enjoyed as a kid. But bottom line is, I want to see a guy from the backfield who can carry it both in between the tackles, bounce it outside, and also catch some passes on short routes. I guess, you know, occasionally you got guys like Ladainian Tomlinson who can go deep for a pass. But, you know, those bread and butter things that a running back are supposed to do, those are the things that I really want to talk about, because Jerome Bettis, I feel, embodied all that. The man had, in his career, 13,662 yards. That puts him at sixth all-time in rushing yardage. And so, when you look at the top 14 guys in terms of rushing yardage career-wise in the NFL, over the history of the NFL, out of those 14 guys, of all the guys who are eligible to be in the Hall of Fame today, all of them were either elected on their first ballot or in their second year of eligibility. Jerome is the first guy to hit 12,000 yards career rushing, not to be elected in his first 2 years of eligibility. And unfortunately, he might be joined soon. Let's see how the Hall treats Edgerrin James, because James also is a 12,000-yard rusher. You may not realize that, but Edgerrin James had quite a prolific career in his first two seasons. He had two rushing titles. And so Edgerrin, to me, is an absolute lock to be in the Hall of Fame's first 2 years of eligibility. Now, we'll see how the voters go, considering they didn't even put Bettis in. I do understand, though, when you look at Bettis's overall career, there's one big problem compared to the other guys who have at least 12,000 rushing yards. And that problem, he never really won a rushing title. Now, when you look at some of the names on this list, not all of them did win a rushing title. But if you just start going down the list of guys, you really start to see how there is something about Jerome that doesn't exactly fit in with the others. So I'm going to take a bit of a challenge to my own position here that Jerome should already be in, and admit that, yeah, there are some things about his resume that aren't as impressive as some the other guys that are in this club of at least 12,000 rushing yards in their career. Now, when you look at guys with multiple rushing titles in that list, you have some epic names. First one that comes to mind is Jim Brown. The greatest running back ever. I'm not going to explain that one. Go look at some film. You'll see that he may have been playing players who were slightly smaller, but, man, they used to be able to hit back in the day. You don't understand just how crazy it was in the NFL when you compare it to the sideline protections that exist today. I mean, we saw some crazy penalties in 2013. I remember one, I think it was week one, Tampa Bay lost to the Jets because of a late hit on the sideline. However, if you go back to look at some of Jim Brown's footage, some of the footage of Jim Brown carrying the ball, he was constantly not just hit at the sideline, but well past the sideline. They used to have to line up the sides of the stadiums with mattresses in order to protect players who were being knocked out of bounds towards the wall of the stadium. They actually needed to lay these down so that players would have a soft spot so they could purposely throw themselves down before they hit the wall, because you could hit that far out of bounds. So you got to understand, for Jim Brown to have 12,000 yards, that is phenomenal. And, you know, he was, I believe he won 8 rushing titles throughout his career. So, you know, this is the guy that set the standard. He is by far the greatest backfield runner in the history of the NFL. Now, you got other guys who have multiple titles that we can discuss who are, you know, considered much better than Bredis is, to be honest with you. Like, between Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders, I mean, people from the 90s always debate who's the better running back of the two. We all know that those two guys were better than Jerome Bettis. There's no question. I mean, Emmitt and Barry each took home 4 rushing titles. I will say, though, I just have to put this out because you probably are wondering, well, if you're listening at this point, you're probably wondering which one I would pick of those two. it's got to be Emmett for me. And the number one reason is, well, I got two reasons why Emmett's better than Barry. Number one reason, Emmett would score his own touchdowns. They wouldn't pull Emmett out in goal line situations, whereas Barry had to be. He just was a smaller guy. He really didn't have that goal line presence that you needed. And here's the other thing that feeds into the fact that Barry had fewer touchdowns than Emmett. Way fewer. Just look at the stats. Barry wasn't even close to the number of touchdowns that Emmett had. They might have been close yardage-wise as they were progressing through their careers, but Barry was never close to Emmett in the touchdown category. I don't care what anybody says about the offensive line that Emmett had, because the reality is Barry was such a small guy. One of his NFL records is actually one nobody wants, and that is he was tackled for loss more than any other runner in NFL history. That is not a good stat. Part of the reason is he was relatively easy to take down based on his size. Now, he was impossible to touch once he got to the open field. His average per carry is all the more insane when you consider he was tackled for loss that many times. But that makes you a flawed player in a certain respect. And that's why, to me, Barry Sanders cannot be considered to be better than Emmett Smith. I know that Emmett was always on better overall teams, but I just have a hard time accepting that Barry, with those flaws, could make up for that with his ability to make the big play. To me, he's akin to a home run hitter who strikes out a lot. You know, you really want that bat in your lineup. You always want that opportunity to get those extra RBIs and all. But for me, I just have a real problem with the way that Barry wasn't able to play as hard as Emmett. Now, let's look at the one other guy who has multiple titles that's in the Hall of Fame, and that's Eric Dickerson. Now, he has the record still for single season rushing yards. I don't think you need to know a lot about Eric Dickerson other than the fact that he wasn't as respected as he should have been in his career. Anyway, it's obvious he's much better than Bettis too. Now, let's look at some guys who also have one title. Who are these guys in the top 14 that at least won one NFL rushing title? And those guys are Walter Payton. Yeah, you heard me. Walter Payton only had one rushing title. Keep that in mind. Earl Campbell beat them three times, back-to-back-to-back years. Earl Campbell was definitely a better running back than Walter Payton. Don't listen to people who tell you that Walter Payton is the best ever. Man had one rushing title. Why? Because there were even better running backs on other teams while he was playing. Walter Payton is definitely one of the best ever. I'm not going to take that away from him, but do not listen to people who say he was the best ever. They are wrong. But Walter Payton has just as many rushing titles as Curtis Martin, who coincidentally retired the same year as Jerome Bettis. And Curtis Martin was not actually elected to the Hall of Fame until his second year. So despite being one of only four guys with 14,000 rushing yards, Curtis Martin had to wait for a second year. I'm not going to be too mad about that, because the one guy who came out with both Curtis Martin and Jerome Bettis that is a running back that was elected to the Hall of Fame on the first ballot was Marshall Faulk, who never won a rushing title. Now, you might ask, why was Marshall Faulk elected on his first ballot? You have to understand how dominant he was in terms of yards from scrimmage. The combined yards from receiving and rushing for Marshall Faulk are the number one reason he's in the Hall of Fame. The guy was just a machine as far as being a slash threat, being able to catch the ball as well as being able to run it. And that's the important part, though, with Marshall Faulk. Watch out for guys who are built in that same mold now, because a lot of them don't have the ability to run between the tackles like Marshall did. That's something that's often missed on people. But when you look at guys who are further down the list, like Tiki Barber, you know, Tiki really only was able to run between the tackles for a couple seasons of his career. Now, when he was great, he was phenomenal. He was one of the top two backs at certain points in his career in the league. But you have to look at the fact that Marshall Faulk was set apart from a lot of guys. You really don't see a lot of guys who are able to catch the ball out of the backfield run as well as him. So the only other guy in the Hall of Fame right now who has that similar ability to lead the league as far as their yards from scrimmage, you know, combined receiving and rushing yards, it's Thurman Thomas. Now, he had to wait till his second ballot to get in the Hall of Fame. That was a travesty. So to me, Thurman Thomas was really the first sign that Jerome might have some issues getting in, because I have no idea who didn't think Thurman Thomas should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's a travesty to me. And then finally, I guess there's one other guy I got to mention. One rushing title to Mark Sound. He had a very weird career because Al Davis was constantly trying to undermine him. He probably could have had more rushing titles if he hadn't spent some of his best years playing for the Raiders. So when you're looking at the number of guys that we've talked about, there's only two other I need to mention who are not yet eligible for the Hall of Fame. And I've already mentioned them in passing. It's LaDainian Tomlinson has multiple rushing titles, as does Edgerrin James, or The Edge, as you all might know him. So those guys, to me, are in another category from Jerome as well. Now, some people here might think that Jerome is probably better than the Edge, but I got to tell you, Jerome never really won a rushing title, and that's what separates him from Edgerrin James. I know that Jerome looked better for the majority of his career as compared to the Edge, who, after his serious knee injury, he really never recovered after his third season because of that knee injury. However, he had such a great career overall, plus those two rushing titles. I think it's hard to say that Jerome was better than the Edge. In my opinion, I'd have to give it to the Edge. At that point, though, it shouldn't come up where both of them are going to be eligible in the same year for the Hall of Fame. To me, that's one of the biggest travesties of this situation, because Jerome should already be in. All the guys I mentioned who are in the Hall of Fame out of those top 14, all of them, every last one of them made it in the first or second year of eligibility. Jerome's the only guy who's now going to have to wait until his fifth year, even though he's a sixth leading rusher of all time. Now, I know he didn't win a rushing title, and I know he only finished top 10. Count this, five times in the top 10 as a running back. And he played, he played more than a decade. So for him to finish eight seasons without being a top 10 running back, that's something that I understand would concern some voters. However, I just think, like, he should not be penalized for some of the inflated numbers that other running backs who are going to become eligible have seen over the last couple of years. Now, even then, we're going to get to this in a moment. We're going to go to break real quick, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the guys that have some inflated numbers who are coming up for eligibility. All right, and we're back. You know, I didn't take a full 5 minutes there. I definitely just felt the need to have a little coffee, and you know, I'm getting used to this whole being responsible for recording myself. I actually have a setup that John would be jealous of right now. I'll tell him about it later, but I'm telling you, I got a mic stand that I use. I play in a band where I basically just have an SM58 hooked up as if I were singing, and I plug that into a pocket recorder that I keep just for purposes, practice sessions, that sort of thing. It's portable, so it literally is the size of a cell phone. Just the setup I have right now is something that would make the lazy man John quite jealous. Anyway, we are now talking about the second half of this discussion. Who are these other players of recent memory that have kind of undermined Jerome's status as a Hall of Famer? You know, instead of just telling you why I think it's a travesty that Jerome isn't in the Hall of Fame yet, I do understand that there is a bit of a reason. There is a bit of an explanation for why. And the number one reason for that is you see a lot more running backs who are able to have long careers with very few individual accolades. Let's just take a look at some of these guys. I think the quintessential guy is Fred Taylor. Not Fred Jackson, I'm sorry. Did I say Fred Jackson earlier? I'm talking about Fred Taylor. Fred Taylor is 15th overall in terms of rushing yards. And the man was barely, he was consistently a top 10 running back in the league, but he was almost never a top five running back. You look at it, he had six seasons in which he was a top 10 running back. He never finished in the top five for rushing yards. And yet he is a guy that almost got to 12,000 rushing yards. So for me, like, he is the first symptom of the modern running back being able to get a lot of yards and really not distinguishing themselves enough to be considered a Hall of Famer. Now, some of you might consider Fred Taylor to be a Hall of Famer. For me, he's really, I gotta say, he's the line for considering guys not necessarily deserving to be in. And the important part here to me is Fred Taylor had 11,695 career rushing yards. Well, now I'm going to set the line at being eligible at around 12,000. You got to break 12,000 for me to be impressed. Because right now, of the 14 guys who have more than 12,000 yards rushing, the only ones who aren't in the Hall of Fame yet, again, are Edgerrin James, who becomes eligible for the first time next year, LaDainian Tomlinson, who doesn't become eligible for a couple of years himself, and then Jerome Bettis, who, as we've said, is the purpose of this episode, already deserves to be in. Now, I'm not going to blame Fred by himself, because when you start going down the list of guys who have more than 10,000 yards rushing in the NFL, now there are guys with fewer than 10,000 we can talk about too in this discussion. I just want to focus on the 28 guys who have more than 10,000 yards rushing in their careers. Because when you look at the list of guys who are not in yet, you sort of get the sense now of why few, if any, are going to get in between the 10,000 and just barely failing to make the 12,000 yard mark. Because in addition to Fred Taylor, the only other guy who's not in the Hall of Fame that got to 11,000 yards, it's Corey Dillon. Now, I don't know how you guys feel about Corey Dillon, but I think he might deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. The way that he was able to make people notice him despite playing for Cincinnati, that's the sort of thing that I will always remember. I will always associate him with the single game rushing record. Now, I know it's been broken since he said it, but, you know, he's an impressive player in that respect. The other thing I also really respect about Corey Dillon is the fact that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's most recent and possibly their last Super Bowl ring together, that was won off of Corey Dillon and his amazing run in that Super Bowl year. I mean, he had an amazing season. Let me just tell you about the stats when they won the Super Bowl. The man had over 1,600 rushing yards, and that put him third overall in the league. And to me, when you look at the fact that in 2004, he was third overall, but he ended up being the running back for the team that won the Super Bowl, that to me says so much more than just winning a rushing title. You had to protect him in order to have him ready for that playoff run, and they did that. And that's why, you know, looking back at the 2013 season, we finally saw New England get back to the running game. They definitely split it up between multiple running backs, but I think that was the formula that got them all the Super Bowl rings in the first place. Let's be honest, like that first Super Bowl, Tom Brady was not good. When they beat the Rams, it was a defensive struggle. And to the extent that he deserved any sort of credit for the win as the Super Bowl MVP, the reality is it was Kevin Falk being wide open for a couple of dump passes that were the majority of Brady's yards on that drive. So it's really hard to get excited about Brady's play that game. It was good enough to win. He did the right things, but it wasn't by any means a spectacular quarterback performance. That was a team that knew how to run the ball effectively. Same goes for the 2014 that had Dillon, but even the year before when they beat Carolina, that was an ugly game. That was one of the worst Super Bowls I'd ever watched in my life up until the end of the third quarter. It was only when the game opened up in the fourth quarter that we had any sort of memorable action. So yeah, when I look at Corey Dillon, I see him as a very important player in the history of the NFL. I think he should be a Hall of Famer. Now, even if you don't agree with me, here's the one reason why Corey Dillon is important and proves that the guys who run the Hall of Fame committee for electing new players into the Hall of Fame are complete idiots. I've read the rules for how they're supposed to look at guys, and they're supposed to look at anybody who has even a colorable claim in the year that they first become eligible. Now, I got to tell you, even if you don't think Corey Dillon is Hall of Fame worthy, let me tell you all you need to know. Corey Dillon had more career rushing yards than O.J. Simpson. Now, say what you will about O.J. as a person, that man was a great running back. And for any player to have more rushing yards in the NFL than O.J. Simpson did, they should talk about it, shouldn't they? Don't you think that's an important thing for the committee to discuss? Well, he's never even been eligible for the initial ballot. When they first whittled down the list that they send out every March from about, you know, I'd say 70 to 100 players down ultimately to the five that they elect, I guess on the final day when they gather Super Bowl week, there's 15 on the list that are whittled down to the five. Well, Corey's not even getting on the first list for the ballot that decides who are going to be the semifinalists. So this is a major problem because that's supposed to be a very loose opportunity for guys just to have their names considered. And the members of the Hall of Fame committee aren't even looking at the list of all-time rushing yards to figure out, oh, Corey Dillon is probably someone we should mention. He's never been discussed, so I have a real problem with the way that he's been treated. That said, as you move further down the list, when you look at all the guys of recent memory who've had 10,000 yards rushing in a season, you're not going to be impressed. I mean, these were good players. You would want them on your team, like, in the present day if they were still at that level of performance. But you start going down this list, and you don't hear the names of guys who often competed for rushing titles. I'm going to leave out some... There are two guys who are currently active. I'm going to leave them out for a minute, but let's start with Warrick Dunn. Warrick Dunn actually had almost 11,000 career rushing yards. Can you believe that? I mean, the guy was always part of a hybrid backfield, and that's really what we're starting to see with some of these names on this list. Guys like Thomas Jones also had more than 10,000 yards. Now, at times, he was a feature back, and yet, does anybody out there look at Thomas Jones and say he's a clear Hall of Famer? No. I think the same also follows for Jamal Lewis. I mean, Jamal had that amazing 2,000-yard running season, and yet, his time in Cleveland did not match the amazing start to his career. So he's difficult to get in there. Now, when you look at some of these other names, I feel for some of these guys. Like, when I hear the name Ricky Waters, I used to love watching Ricky Waters play. He did some great things catching the ball in the backfield. You know, it's very tempting for me to want him in there. Similarly, Tiki Barber was pretty good at catching the ball in the backfield. But the thing with Tiki was he was never a feature back for his... He was only a feature back for certain seasons of his career. He had a problem being able to shoulder the load for extended periods throughout his career. So he had brief moments in which he was able to shoulder the load, but one of the reasons for his early retirement, frankly, was complaining about the workload in practice. And he blamed Tom Coughlin, who went on to coach his team to win two Super Bowls, by the way, after Tiki left. But the problem with Tiki was, you know, I remember him from that Super Bowl in 2000 when they lost to the Ravens. That was when he was sort of emerging as this, is he an elite running back type question. He technically had a 1,000-yard rushing year that season, but, you know, he really was just more of a third down back trying to figure out if he could handle a full season at running back. And he did prove it eventually, but I just don't think there's enough proof on his resume to show that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Let's not forget that the voters are probably holding against him. He left his wife while she was pregnant with twins for a woman who was 24. Let's not forget that. That's definitely a factor. But I'll say this. Tiki should probably at least be on the ballot when him and his brother's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. First year that Tiki's bro, his name slips my mind, but the second Rondé is eligible for the Hall of Fame, they really should give him a serious consideration, because if they're ever going to elect Tiki, probably would be good to do it at the same time as Rondé, since it would be much harder for anybody to criticize Tiki if he went in at the same time as Rondé. But let's take a look at just a couple other guys that are on this list so far. Nobody I've mentioned between Warrick. I mean, Ricky Waters had a great career, but there's nothing just screaming out for him to be in the Hall of Fame at this point. I mean, anybody who feels like he's a Hall of Famer, please comment on the wall. Let's see what you have to say to defend him. But between Warrick and then Ricky and then Jamal Lewis, I mean, any Jamal Lewis defenders, feel free to, like, tell me why his career matters after he got to Cleveland. I don't see it. Thomas Jones is another guy who had a good career, and yet he never really competed for a rushing title. So Tiki is a guy that came pretty close, but, you know, there's certain things about him that really put off a lot of people. And so you got two other guys that are probably... Well, let's talk about all three of the other guys who have 10,000 yards that are eligible or are going to be soon. You're talking about Eddie George, Otis Anderson, and Ricky Williams. Now, with Eddie had that amazing Super Bowl run with the Titans. That's the thing that's most memorable with him. There's a lot of things about his work ethic to admire. But, yeah, there are certain things about Eddie that just don't translate to the Hall of Fame necessarily. So, for me, it's still a push with him. There's just so many other guys right now that do seem more deserving. Like, I'd have to put Corey Dillon ahead of him at this point, but I'd probably put Eddie George above Tiki Barber, to be honest with you. Like, the things that I watch Eddie George do were far more impressive over the course of an entire career. There was no point in Eddie's career where people were asking, well, is he just a third down back? There were those moments towards the end of his career where people said, has he carried the ball too much? But it really does impress me the number of carries Eddie had to do what he did as long as he did. because that man actually did set a record for number of carries in a season. I don't know if you all remember that, but anytime a player does that, that puts their career at risk. So good for him. He's an inspiring player. Inspiring player, despite the fact he went to Ohio State. I'm going to call him an inspiring player. sorry to Buckeyes fans, but, you know, not my people. I just got to go to Otis Anderson now. Otis Anderson, again, I mentioned him earlier in the show. He is a former running back for the New York Giants on a Super Bowl winning team under Parcells. He actually had some interesting years. He kind of had one of those careers where he started off as a top three running back. You know, he was running alongside the likes of Walter Payton as well as Earl Campbell. He was kind of in that mix for the top three in his first couple years. But, you know, he fell off. He fell out of favor. I believe he's with the Cardinals. And then, you know, it was only when he got cut by them and then landed with New York that he was able to reestablish his career. So he was kind of an NFL comeback story. Now, Otis is almost going to hit that 25-year mark for eligibility in 2017. So I think that's going to be the time they really reconsider him. And, you know, as far as these ancient players who are getting in, I'm sorry to phrase it that way. I don't know what they call it. They have some nice term for it. But the reality is, like, they're going back and digging deep to figure out if they're guys who belong in that weren't obvious at the start. Now, whether that's a valid enterprise or not, it sometimes is, but for the most part, it does seem like we're kind of stretching to get guys in, as evidenced by the punter who was inducted this year. That said, I think when Otis Anderson is up for that, he's somebody I would probably vote for if I were on the committee. I mean, I would have a hard time not saying that he is not a major part of the story of the NFL, because to run alongside and compete with Earl and Walter for the rushing title, and then to win a Super Bowl with the Giants under Parcells, and to be an NFL Comeback Player of the Year, that's a great story. I hear so many people talking about Kurt Warner needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Well, what about Kurt? What about Otis Anderson? Why are we talking about Kurt Warner as the only guy who ever, like, was down on his luck that came back? Let me tell you something. Otis Anderson, very similar story. And then finally, here's a guy I just love talking about because I went to the University of Texas. But Ricky Williams, to me, by far, greatest running back I've ever been able to witness. Not in person. I will admit I never saw him, but he's one of the reasons I went to University of Texas. I actually attended there immediately following his Heisman campaign. And so I've followed Ricky's career very closely. Been very impressed, honestly, with his opinion to quit football in 04. Yeah, a lot of people at the time thought, hey, this guy's crazy. He just wants to go smoke weed for a year. Well, here's the reality, guys. He didn't want to be hit as many times as he was being hit. For a guy who actually carried the ball 400 times in a season at one point, he came to realize, like, this is crazy. I do not want to subject my body to the kind of pain that Earl Campbell went through, another Texas product. But Ricky knew Earl from all that history of being fellow Heisman winners from Texas. And to watch Earl in his current state of being just debilitated from his career and the injuries he suffered. I mean, Earl didn't get to 10,000 yards rushing his career because he was hurt. After those back-to-back-to-back rushing titles, Earl was basically done. I mean, he just wasn't the same player after that. So Ricky really did something that we now look as being the rational thing to do in light of everything we've learned about concussions and the excessive punishment that can occur to a player's body over the course of an NFL career. Ricky was perhaps the first warning sign of there's something wrong with the way that we ask NFL players to conduct business. So he's a guy that I still would have to admit does not belong in the Hall of Fame. However, the reason he's important in the Hall of Fame story, I consider the fact that he got 10,000 yards rushing in his career despite spending half his career as a third down back, you know, willingly, of course. But, you know, when he came back to Miami after his year off, he was able to convince Parcells and Nate Saban after him that he wanted to be a part of that team. The reason why Ricky is the baseline, the important part of the Hall of Fame discussion, is that anybody who did not do as well as him in their career probably doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, because for the second half of his career, he was a part-time player. And yet, with his physical ability, he was still able to hit 10,000. So when I compare other players in the future to Ricky Williams, I have to ask, did they actually perform up to the same level that he did? Because if they didn't, playing full-time, there's a problem there for them and their Hall of Fame candidacy. And that's going to be the end of the show today, I think. We could talk about some guys who are upcoming from the current generation of running backs who might be Hall of Fame eligible, obviously Adrian Peterson's the guy everybody's got on their minds. He just surpassed Ricky Williams this season as far as career rushing yards. But we got a couple other guys who have done pretty well career-wise in rushing yards as well. Steven Jackson, believe it or not, has 10,678 yards. So next year he could be in that 11,000. Who knows? If he sticks around for two, he might even make it to the 12,000-yard club himself. And let's not forget Frank Gore. I mean, Frank's been playing a lot of games recently. He's been in the conference championship game three times in 3 years in a row. Played in another Super Bowl. He's had a lot of postseason action, which means when you add those games up, he's basically played another half season on top of the past three regular seasons. So we'll see if he's going to be able to play much longer. At this point in his career, he's got 9,967 career rushing yards. So whether or not he makes the conversation remains to be seen. He hasn't really won a rushing title, whereas Adrian Peterson most certainly has. As far as Steven Jackson, I haven't really gotten a chance to take much of a look at how close he's gotten. But yeah, he's had three seasons where he finished top three in rushing attempts. As far as rushing yards, finished runner-up once. Four top 10 finishes. So, you know, we're really looking at one major running back that is moving pretty high on that career rushing yard list. We could talk about some of the guys who've won rushing titles in recent years. I mean, Shady McCoy won this year. And we don't know where he's going to go, but you look at guys like Maurice Jones-Drew. Is he going to be able to bounce back with Jacksonville in the coming years? Or is this season somewhat indicative of where his career is headed? I don't think it is. I think the new running system started to work at the end of the season for Jacksonville, so we'll see if that improves. But I do think a guy like Arian Foster is unlikely to make the Hall of Fame. It just seems to me like he has too much of a workload that's really going to saddle him with problems going forward in his career. Same goes for Chris Johnson, who won in 2009 with that amazing 2,000-yard season. He just seems tired as well. I mean, I honestly would put, don't say I'm crazy, but Matt Forte is more likely than those two guys, in my opinion, to get in the Hall of Fame. So we'll just see if Matt Forte can hold up, because if he can have the longevity that I think he can, I mean, he's going to have some very impressive numbers. He will very easily reach Tiki Barber-like numbers, who, again, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer either, but if you can actually be that good, you're going to be in the conversation. So, and that's going to be the discussion today. I think we're going to call it on what we've discussed so far when it comes to NFL Hall of Famers at the running back position. I guess the one last note I'd make is next time we take up the subject, two people I really want to talk about are Herschel Walker and finally Terrell Davis. I mean, looking at those guys' numbers, there's something to be said for them being in the Hall of Fame as well. I'm going to save it for another day, though. Hope y'all enjoyed, and we'll talk next week when John and I are back on the mic together, and we'll be discussing the results of the NFL Combine. So hope you appreciate my virgin voyage on a solo podcast.